John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time. My name's Taylor Payne and it's an absolute pleasure to be back in your ears once again. And yes, sorry chaps, I'm afraid we are going to have to talk about football and specifically Newcastle United. I've got Chris Woff and George Coggan with me. Chris, how the devil are you? Wearing a Pescara shirt today, I believe.
I am indeed, yes, just to try and brighten. I've got a rainbow, you know, to try and brighten everyone's day. Just so, you know, there may be clouds, there may be rain, but you know,
there may be trouble ahead.
Something beautiful can come from it.
Fair play.
That's strangely positive for me, isn't it, me? There you go.
I know, it was very out of character. George, how are you doing? You all right?
Well, I'm reporting to you live from the Knacker's Yard, where I've recently checked myself in. I had a bit of a salutary day yesterday. I went for a eye test, a hearing test, and then I went to hospital for an x-ray. Basically, all I can say is that getting old is not great.
Yeah.
But there will be more information to come on my health issues in the coming days. That sounds a bit more sinister than I meant it to. This will be my final podcast. No, I'm not saying that.
Straight to the glue factory for you, dear boy.
How are you, Taylor?
Yeah, I'm all right. I've had a bit of a flare-up with my foot injury, which I was struggling with a little while ago. I seem to have done it a bit more damage, but yeah, we're getting there. At least I had Newcastle United to keep me positive over the weekend. That was a boon, wasn't it?
Well, it's pain elsewhere, isn't it? Makes you forget the other pain. Yeah.
It certainly is. Right then, chaps, headlines in 30 seconds or less. Here we go. Performance review at the end of the season, George.
Yes, I mean, not really a surprise, I don't think, but because as they always do, Newcastle will look at all aspects of the club operations at the end of the season. That includes the first team, it includes the manager. This is something that David Ornstein, our colleague at The Athletic, wrote about at the start of the week. But the mood post-Bournemouth...
Post-Palace.
What did I say?
Post-Bournemouth.
But the mood post-Palace is that Eddie Howe is still being supported by the club, but they will have a look at what's happened, and that will, you know, that will include observations and whatever else from Howe himself.
Chris, Iraola's Bournemouth exit comes at a very interesting time.
Yeah, if Eddie Howe thinks that things couldn't get any worse, then I don't think he wants to necessarily look at this weekend's fixture, which is against Bournemouth, his former club, who he's never beaten in the Premier League. And then Iraola, the Spaniard, who has done a very good job at Bournemouth, has announced he's leaving. And for some, this has been seen as almost like an audition for the Newcastle job. Could he be Eddie Howe's potential successor? So yeah, it seems like the worst moment potentially for this fixture.
George, Newcastle's anti-racist message.
So the Bournemouth match coincides with the 30th anniversary of Show Racism the Red Card, a brilliant campaign which was actually formed on Tyneside There will be a celebration of Newcastle's first 11 black players. But this also comes at a time that will be Newcastle's first home game since Sunderland, where there was that allegation of racist abuse. Really, really dispiriting. And so comes at a very important time. Tune in later in the show. We have a nice conversation with Les Ferdinand, who is one of those 11 players.
And finally, Johan Martinez signs, Chris.
Yes, we spoke about this last week, about how Newcastle were hoping to conclude a deal with Independiente del Valle for the 16-year-old winger, Johan Martinez. That has now been completed, but he cannot move to the UK until he's 18, so that's this next summer. He will stay there on loan, but for this and potential more exciting signings and the loan market in general, how Newcastle are working with their academy and trying to bring players through, you can listen to an Extra Time episode, which we'll be putting out later this week on that very, very subject.
I think this time last week, I congratulated us on going through the headlines in a way that was both seamless. It felt like we were proper pros. It felt like we knew exactly...
It's gone right out of the window, hasn't it?
Yeah, a week is a long time in podcasting.
It certainly is.
That's what I'd like to say.
It certainly is. Right then, chaps, let's get stuck in. Here we go. So if defeat at Crystal Palace proved anything, it's that Newcastle's problems have deeper roots than just tired legs. Three-week fixture hiatus, no significant international minutes for anyone barring Anthony Gordon, perhaps. And yet the closing stages of the game played out much like league defeats that followed midweek fixtures. The malaise is described very well by correspondent James, who writes, "Hi lads, just on my way back from Selhurst and cannot fathom how crap those last 25 minutes were. For the first time, I'm starting to question Eddie. I have no idea what he was trying to do with the front three. To make matters worse, Voldemort was given just a token 10 minutes at the end. Up till now, I've always made excuses for Eddie. I thought the team were just tired, but with 3 weeks off and Palace playing a European tie just 3 days before, that doesn't hold this time. We are always worse in the second half, and I wonder if after 5 years, they just need a new voice in the dressing room, as much as that sucks. Maybe I'm just pissed off, but it's the exact same feeling as 3 weeks ago. This has to be some massive change, and no part of the club should be excluded from that discussion of how we move forward. At least Lewis Miley looked back to his best." And that's from James. Thanks for that, James. And that's going to form the basis of our discussion to start the show off. James sounds like how we all feel. Everyone's knackered. Even the away end couldn't muster much of a moan, George, could they?
As I said in the pod last week, I was almost at the point of looking forward to football again. Yeah. And then what happened?
Newcastle United
happened. He expresses that very well. Whether you agree with the sort of individual points about players or how or whatever, I think the most damaging thing, again, we talked about this on match day, was just this feeling that there was no change. It was almost seamless. With Sunderland, we were talking about the same things, the same failings, that same sort of fatigue, if you want. Newcastle looking as if they'd played 50 games and not just had 3 weeks off. Absolutely highlighting the same mistakes, dropping points, dropping losing positions.
Yeah,
that is really damaging. After a break like that, and after a game like Sunderland, you want to show that there is an alternative story, that there's an alternative narrative. Everybody knows that that wasn't good enough, so we have to respond. And it was the same old story, and that just feels very damaging in the circumstances. So I can't disagree with that feeling that James talks about.
25 points now dropped from winning positions, Chris. I feel like I've watched that game over and over this season. I feel like I'm seeing the same thing every week.
Well, that's the most damaging bit about it, is that there are quite a few elements like that. James mentioned second halves and sort of collapses in that point. Goals in the final 15 minutes of games, it's 18 in the Premier League. This season, nobody's shipped more at that point. Maybe the lack of ideas that Newcastle have in the final third, particularly when they don't have Bruno Guimaraes on the pitch. Just generally, there's so many. But the winning positions, well, I mean, the 5 points, dropped 5 points more than any other side. So, I mean, that's staggering. So that's 25% more than anybody else. And it's, as George and I said on the post-match podcast, if you just take even a third of those, then Newcastle will be so much higher in the Premier League. And it just feels like, it does feel like a self-fulfilling prophecy to a certain degree. It feels like mentality-wise, there's an issue. Tactically, the way that Newcastle are controlling games is an issue. There's been a lot of said about game management. We've talked about this season, dark arts alike. Newcastle don't have any of that, or certainly aren't showing it consistently enough in those moments. And then what was so dispiriting about Palace was the difference with Sunderland is although Sunderland started better and did grow, it started poorly, sorry, and did grow into the game, they were sort of still at half-time, whereas Palace, basically, until they brought on Mateta and made the three subs, it was almost like a game that they didn't really want. It's like if Newcastle had scored a second, I don't think anyone at Selhurst Park or anyone at Palace would have been that bothered.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, oh, right, we're still actually in this game after an hour. Let's bring on some of the big guns. And we could.
It's like they woke up, wasn't it?
Yeah, they woke up and sensed that this game is still there. And that's the problem going forward. It's like, I've had this joke to a couple of people over the last couple of days, sort of like, dark humour, but saying that people are talking about where's Arsenal's next win going to come from. Well, Newcastle go there a week on Saturday, and even if Arsenal fall behind, they'll still believe that they're in that game despite all the pressure on them, because Newcastle 1-0 up is almost the most dangerous position for them. It's Howe doesn't have an answer for it, and I think that because it's not just one factor, I think it's multifaceted now, and I also do think it is becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy.
The only league wins since the first week of 2026, George, have come from formerly unlikely sources, Chelsea, Spurs away and Man United. Also, they were wins that arrived contrary to expectation. Does this represent a little glimmer of hope for Newcastle at all or not?
Well, Eddie Howe can't beat Bournemouth, can he? His former club.
In the Premier League.
In the Premier League. So that is a proper grasping of straws, I'm afraid.
That's where we are now, though, isn't it? That is literally where I am.
Yeah. I mean, something that Howe said after Palace is that it wasn't too long ago that Newcastle were beating Chelsea and looking solid and looking strong. The Man United victory was a good one. They have that in their locker, I suppose you would say. It's just that if you put together the second half against Barcelona, the game against Sunderland, the game against Palace, that's more recent evidence. And it's evidence separated by an international break in which you would be looking for some answers or some responses. And those answers and responses didn't come. I don't trust anything about this Newcastle team now, which is a problem. You used to be able to say, well, you know what you get from this team. Or you were able to say, I know that they'll respond.
Yeah.
They haven't done this on multiple occasions this season. It's just so, you know, we're using the word disappointing or dispiriting, but like how bad that Sunderland game ended up for there not to have been a response against Palace, which just featured those basic things, some of those basic things that Chris talked about, whether it's dark arts, whether it's, you know, just aggression, whether it's, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't an easy game for them because Palace don't play in a style that makes it easy for you to impose yourself upon them. But even so, the way it ended so listlessly was awful. So I can't look at their record this year and think that there's anything to take from it, except that there have been flashes when they've got sort of decent results, but nah.
Just on that, I always remember something someone who's worked closely with Howe before once said to me, and that is that whenever Eddie Howe needs a win, he gets one. And that has tended to be the case in the past. But eventually, all these trends do end, so that there can be no guarantee. But I still think he has usually, at the very darkest moments, managed to get a win. But then you could have argued that should have been Palace then, and it wasn't. But I think Bournemouth is one that would definitely classify as that, where you could very much do with that right now.
And the Howe muttering continues to grow, doesn't it? Although the club continue to back him privately, at least. What are the options for change come the summer, Chris? So obviously replacing the manager is the big one that a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I said this a few weeks ago. I think that, well, there's two very drastic things you can do which are different, which one is to significantly overhaul the squad with Eddie Howe and his coaching staff still there. The other is to replace the head coach, or the even more drastic is to do all of the above and sort of make the change everything all at once. Given the squad overhaul that there's going to be, and given that they do see Eddie Howe as part of the solution still, or at least that's still the messaging, I think they'd prefer to basically be the squad overhaul one as to the change. I mean, but George and I have kept saying this, that you can have that plan as much as you want, and the plan may be that Eddie Howe is going to be there at the start of next season, but they've got to get to the start of next season. And at the minute, it just feels like that they are actually getting further and further away from that point. It's difficult at this moment to see, unless the next six games go particularly well, how you can look through what is happening right now, and maybe that's just because we're in the thick of it, but look through what's happening right now, listen to more and more supporter sentiment and how frustrated they are potentially with that, and that Howe can be the one who's in charge of leading all of that. And then if next season wasn't to start brilliantly, then any momentum you would be generating would be completely gone. And so I still think that the plan at the moment is to stick with Eddie Howe, but there needs to be something on the pitch, and there wasn't that at Palace. And so we're almost stuck in this cycle at the moment of keep saying the same thing, and there's running out of games for that to be proven that is going to be the case going forward, or should be the case going forward.
We've said this, it feels like a delicate moment. Now, if I'm speaking personally as a Newcastle fan, I want Newcastle to be able to get into a place where Eddie Howe stays on as head coach this summer, leads the rebuild, leads the reset. Why am I saying that? Because I think he's got a body of work that suggests, given a fair wind, given adults in the room with him at the top of the club, given a support network, he has shown that he can make players better. The record in the transfer market overall is very good. I, of course, am not including last summer in that. And, you know, he's demonstrated that he can turn Newcastle into trophy winners. I do accept, however, that the evidence of this season is not great, particularly if you're looking at the Premier League. And I don't think he would argue to the contrary. But what Chris says is spot on. There has to be momentum. There has to be a springboard. And so these games become very important, because if you are talking about a major reset, everybody has to be all in for that. And that includes Eddie Howe. You know, he's not a stupid man. He is, you know, he's as committed as ever. That's, you know, that's our information. And he wants to be part of things. But there is that caveat. There's that caveat that he expressed himself when, in the summer of PSR and Anderson leaving and Amanda leaving and Paul Mitchell coming in, he has to feel that support network with him. He has to feel supported and wanted. Now, he also has to feel like he's getting his messages across to players and that players are responding. By the way, he does still feel that, even if the evidence is not great. He wants to feel like he has the support of the rest of the club, and he needs the support of supporters. And I think if any of those things break down, then that would be enough for him to say, okay, maybe I've reached the end of my time here. I don't think we're at that point yet, but I also don't think we're a huge distance away from it. It becomes like a really big few weeks, because I think everybody has to think about, including us, including fans, we have to think about what we want, about what we want for our club, and Howe has to think the same thing, and then the people in charge have to think the same thing. To go back to how I started, the starting point is that he will be their head coach next season, but there is still a distance to go to reach that starting point, if that makes sense.
Chris, if the club do go down the route of replacing the manager, we need to be careful, really, don't we? Especially fans need to be careful on the demands that they put on the club. It's a busy managerial market in store this summer.
Yeah, I take that point, but I also think that if it becomes overwhelmed that people want change, that happens. It's not a direct parallel, but I think you just look around the world at the minute and you look at the sort of politics and elections, and incumbents don't last very long right now, and it's becoming less and less that people... Like, I mean, Eddie Howe is the fourth longest serving manager in the Premier League. He's managed the second most games for Newcastle in the Premier League. Might be just third behind Robson and Keegan, but he's managed a lot of games. He's been there a long time, and so eventually people may move towards wanting something different, and they just want to see something different. So yes, I do get the sort of caution against it. You don't know what's going to come next, but really, should there be pressure on the club to if they do make a change, to bring in someone who can move them forward? Well, that has to be the idea. If Vision 2030, if the idea of where Newcastle's going to move, if they do decide that Eddie Howe is no longer the person who they have faith in to produce that, then they have to have identified who they do think can bring that in. It will be a busy managerial market. It's going to be a complicated one, given the World Cup. Some managers may wait until after the World Cup because A, they might be leaving national jobs, or B, they might be waiting to see where X goes. But does that mean that this job becomes available? So it will be a state of flux, really, and quite a lot of turbulence in that market. But Newcastle just have to first of all decide, is Eddie Howe still the man moving forward? That's the message at the minute. That's what they insist right now. But I think if there's any doubts from them about that, certainly about the summer of change that needs to be transfer-wise, that's when serious questions need to be asked. Because if you have doubt about that now, you can't be in a position where you start next season, having let Eddie Howe be heavily involved in transfer dealings, and then 3 months into next season make a change, because I think that will be the worst of all worlds. So they have to have full belief in whatever they're doing, whether that's keep Eddie Howe or move him on. And I think the next six games will either buttress their view on that or will potentially change it.
George, whatever happens this summer, there is a potential of a significant squad overhaul, isn't there?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I think that's what we're pointing towards. I mean, the piece that I wrote for The Athletic after Palace was that we're approaching an ending at Newcastle, and it's just sort of how big an ending that is, or how wide an ending, you know, because it's like, obviously, Isak is long gone. We're still seeing the after effects of that on the team. We know now that Kieran Trippier is going. There's big question marks over Fabian Schär, potentially others. And then, of course, you've got the players that have been linked with other clubs over the past sort of few weeks and months. People like Anthony Gordon and Sandro Tonali and Tino Livramento and others. I mean, so in terms of players leaving, that's a big deal. But, you know, Chris has obviously talked a lot about the work Newcastle need to do all areas of the pitch. Now, if they do sell one of those big players, they'll have leeway to spend some money. And again, you know, if you're talking about the manager's position, Eddie Howe's position, it's how much he has buy-in to that. And, you know, is he prepared to go again like that? Would he be prepared to kind of lose big players and go again? I mean, again, my information is that he would, you know, that he remains as committed as ever. He wants to lead the reset. That's important. Now, again, how you get that to sort of make sense with 2030 and that sort of vision is an interesting conversation that I think the club needs to have internally and probably externally as well. But yeah, no, I mean, like, whichever way you carve it up, it's a massive summer ahead.
There's been a lot of reports over the course of the last week linking Anthony Gordon joining Harry Kane at Bayern Munich, reports which haven't necessarily been played down by people in and around him, that haven't been bigged up either, but I think that it feels like one of those ones that there isn't necessarily smoke without fire, and Anthony Gordon is very much one of those players who I think Newcastle are braced for the fact could move this summer, possibly, maybe. The idea is that he does move this summer for all parties, and that's not necessarily something they're scared of. But he is someone who's not only been playing left wing, he's played centre forward, obviously, recent months. Didn't start there at the weekend, curiously, given he had been seen as a centre forward. But that's not necessarily given. But if Anthony Gordon is to leave Newcastle, just as Sandro Tonali or the like, there are very few clubs who can actually afford him and what Newcastle would want, very few destinations he could necessarily go to. So if Bayern Munich are actually seriously interested, then that may be one for Newcastle. But then that, if that is the case, Newcastle have to get that sorted early or know early that that's happening and make sure that they have alternatives lined up and brought in. They're probably unlikely to get someone who can perform as a winger and a striker, but they do seem fairly confident that they can hopefully sign a winger, maybe not of Anthony Gordon's level now, but of someone who they believe can progress in the next few years and from their early 20s and become that sort of level.
The other kind of issue that you can talk about in terms of change is coaching staff, you know, not just Eddie Howe himself, but the people around him. And it's, you know, a criticism that is sometimes levelled at him is that it's always the same people around him. You know, don't players need other voices? You know, that's something we've also talked about as well. It's kind of human nature, particularly I think with older players, that if you're hearing the same voice all over again, if you're hearing the same voice day in, day out in training, at some point you stop listening. Do you need to kind of refresh that? So, I mean, I'm sure that's something that the club will look at, you know, when they look at everything else. One little thing on that is that it's not often sort of talked about. Of course, Eddie Howe inherited Graham Jones. He's very much in the picture at Newcastle and heavily involved. They did also appoint Martin Marc as their first set-piece coach last summer. And of course, the data team has been built up, you know, quite significantly around Howe as well. So it's not as if those things haven't been changing. Of course, James Bunce as well, as performance and conditioning. So those things are, you know, those things have changed a bit, but that, of course, is another area where they could look to shake things up.
Right then, chaps, let's move on. We're down to the last few tickets for our show with True Faith at the Gosforth Civic Theatre on Monday, May 18th. And that is absolutely the last few. Only a handful, obviously, depending on...
Four tickets we're down to.
That's not a handful then, is it? That's Yeah. Is that a handful?
Well, it's,
I would have said five.
It's a hand, a mostly full.
Because you've got five fingers.
How much is a handful?
This is the kind of witty banter you're going to expect on that evening, definitely. So
yeah, we need to do. We need to get better. Can we do our own review at the end of the season as well, please?
All getting sacked.
Because I think my time might be up. Without and yours, and Chris.
Ollie's great. We'll Ollie's keep Ollie, good, but we might need a significant squad overhaul come the summer.
I think it's time.
So we're down to the last few tickets. So go to gosfordcivictheatre.co.uk to find out more and potentially buy one of those last four tickets.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The 25-26 season means it's now 30 years on from Newcastle's ill-fated title tilt under Kevin Keegan. And we had a lovely chat with Warren Barton on our Pod on the Tyne Extra Tyne last week, getting into the weeds on that beautiful failure and the incredibly mixed feelings of pride and anguish that linger to this day. Warren was one of a group of four high-profile signings Kevin made that summer to supercharge a title challenge alongside David Ginola, Shaka Hislop and Les Ferdinand. Arriving from QPR, Ferdinand was a man in demand. A real coup for us with a remarkable 41 goals in just 68 appearances for Newcastle United. He delivered. George has been talking to Sir Les this week about that season, of course, but to mark a more sober anniversary as well. Also turning 30 this year is football's anti-racism campaign, Show Racism the Red Card, and War Flags will present a special display at the Bournemouth game celebrating Newcastle's black players. Surprisingly, perhaps, there weren't all that many before the mid-90s. And what are your memories of this time, George?
I was a young reporter at the time. I was also still a season ticket holder, and to be honest, I'd been involved in sort of anti-racism stuff around the stadium in the 1980s, but it kind of feels so weird now to think that Les Ferdinand was still one of our first 11 black players. So that featured in the conversation. But also, of course, there was the really distressing and dispiriting thing that happened in the Sunderland match, of course, which was that alleged incident of racist abuse towards a Sunderland player. Just awful that we're kind of still talking about that. So this is the first home game after that, when the Premier League's anti-discriminatory protocol was used by the referee, so the game was actually stopped for 3 minutes. The referee goes over to the sidelines to talk to the managers, talk to the fourth official, and explain what's kind of going on. So it feels like, the word celebration is in some ways the right word to talk about an important campaign like Show Racism the Red Card, but it's also the wrong word, because the fact that it still exists talks to the fact that we still have this problem in society, even if it's less evident inside stadiums now. So anyway, that's some of the context for this chat with Les, a player who I just adored watching.
It's an organisation that's been going for, as you said, 30 years now, and anything that helps to educate people in the way of racism, okay, gets a nod from me. Unfortunately, 30 years on, we're still talking about the same things. I think stadiums have improved in terms of the collective of people that go to watch football. You know, when I was growing up as a kid, I wasn't allowed to go into a stadium because my parents feared for my safety, not the fact that I wanted to go and watch football and they were all for that, but they just didn't feel like it was a safe environment for me. I'd like to think today that doesn't matter where you're from, what nationality you are, you would feel safe going into a stadium to watch a game of football and show racism, red card, and all these organisations that try to combat racism in football are a major part of that.
I'm the same generation of you, and I remember going to football in the 1980s, and it was a very, very different environment, as you say. It was often sort of seen as a recruitment ground for the far right and things like that. Has that problem gone away from your perspective in terms of football, or has it just moved elsewhere?
I think it's just moved elsewhere. Football in the past was an environment and a place where people could come and vent their frustrations at you being a different colour.
Yeah.
Being honest, we're allowed to get away with it. You know, the monkey chants, the banana throwing, all the stuff that came with it was acceptable back in the 80s. You know, we had programs on the TV that depicted, you know, racism from a very high. When I say high, it was just morally allowed to happen.
Yeah.
And no one frowned, no one called it out. It was just something that was done. It was seen as part and parcel of football. People could come vent their frustrations at your colour and no one said anything. And they would go to their mates, see you next week at wherever. And the same thing would happen week in, week out.
Did you confront it much in your career and, in fact, at Newcastle? Sorry, I mean confront it in the sense that did it happen to you?
No, not too much. In my early part of my career, first came in. I came in 1987, went to QPR, and I remember sort of like it's been well documented in my autobiography when I spoke about being racially abused by Evertonians back in the day. And I remember we had a good young defender called Paul Parker who was being touted by a load of clubs when he was at QPR because he was doing well before he went to Manchester United. And I remember him getting messages from sort of like, he was talked about Liverpool, talked about Everton, and he got letters saying, we don't want your sort at our football club and so on and so forth. So it was very prevalent back then. I didn't encounter what the likes of the late Cyril Regis, late Laurie Cunningham, Brendan Gresson, what these guys encountered. But certainly it was still there and prevalent when I was playing.
As I said, it's going to be the first game at St James's Park since Sunderland, which was obviously very disappointing on the pitch for Newcastle. But there was also this incident off the pitch. There's an alleged incident of racism, which is still being looked at, and really feels very shocking in 2026 to be talking about. How did you respond to that? How do you feel about that?
I know you're saying it's shocking. I'm not shocked by it. I think whenever there's a situation, I mean, I watch football now, and you know, I'm unfortunate. I get to go to a lot of games. I work for some of the TV companies and often at games. And whenever there's a penalty shootout, I'm always fearful of the black person going forward, stepping forward to take a penalty, because if he misses that penalty, it's not that he's hit a bad penalty or it's they've lost the penalty shootout. What comes into it is his colour. And we're seeing it time and time again. Miss penalties or they miss a great chance. They're racially abused over social media. Where you say, it's shocking. It's disappointing that we're still talking about it. But I've never believed it's totally gone away. It always rears its ugly head.
And as you said at the start, it's sort of gone, it's become somewhere else. It's sort of, if it's not in the stadium, it's online. It's online now. And that's why things like show racism, the red card. This is an anniversary, but the message remains absolutely as important and vital as it always has been.
Yeah.
Can I also ask you about that idea of being on a banner at St James's? And I mentioned to you before I start recording that 95-96 has been has been a sort of in my mind a lot recently, just because it's the 30th anniversary of that as well. How do you feel 30 years on that your face is going to be in the Gallagher End or part of the stadium to celebrate your achievements as a footballer for Newcastle?
You know, it's kind of like mixed feelings. I got to be honest. Should it be celebrated just because I was black, or should it be just because, you know, I was a footballer and I did okay while I was there? You know, I think sometimes the more we highlight things, the more of a problem it becomes. If that makes sense. I don't know if it does make sense. I can't like know what I'm thinking.
No, it does. I mean, I think the thing that sort of surprised me was that when this kind of project was mentioned, and this is just me being completely honest, I was very surprised that you would be in the first 11 black players to have played for Newcastle in 1996. I mean, I find it very difficult to sort of square that thought that... that even then, I mean, I know it was 30 years ago, but we're still talking about like the first 11 players to play for Newcastle who were black. I mean, I find that sort of astonishing to think back on now.
Yeah.
That was actually my initial thought when I sort of heard. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, listen, growing up, I don't remember, you know, many black players playing for Newcastle. I remember me and Dina, and then obviously Andy Cole. I don't remember many others until I joined.
I'll ask a different kind of question if I can then, which is that, as I said, we're also 30 years on from 95, 96, and that very, very special team is in the mind of Newcastle fans. I mean, the reason we're still talking about that team now is because of how special it was, because of how fantastic it was. And albeit that season ended in pain and anguish, it was an extraordinary team to be part of and to be following, certainly.
Oh, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. When I look back, it there's not a day that's not painful thinking about that period of time, and thinking about when I came to the club, what Kevin Keegan was saying he was trying to achieve. He was trying to build a team that was going to entertain and be able to win the Premier League, and we came so close and should have done it. If there was a regret I ever had in my football career, it was that I didn't manage to get that across the line. And so to be part of that and still remembered, as you said, 30 years on. I mean, normally people turn around and say they never remember. You never remember the team who finished second.
Yeah, but everyone remembers that team.
Everybody remembers that team. And no matter where I go, 30 years on, people still say to me, how did you not win that league that year? And they say, well, you know, I'm not a Newcastle. I was so desperate for Newcastle to win the league that year because of the brand of football that you guys were playing. And then they really loved the name of some of the players and so on and so forth. And you just go, yeah, no, you know, it's painful to... So to be recognised for that, I'm proud to a degree of that. But I don't know if I sit here saying I'm proud to be one of the first black players to play for Newcastle.
Yeah. No, I think that's very fair. That was you at your absolute peak, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm not. Yeah. I mean, I've watched a few games back from that season now, and it's just a reminder of that season and the one after. Just, oh man, you were astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some TPR fans would argue that I had a couple of good years there. You know, especially before the 2 years before I came to Newcastle. I had a couple of really good years at QPR where I played some football. And it was probably because of that, when I came to St James's Park, I never had no fear. I'd never ever felt that it wasn't going to go right. And I know we didn't win the league, but in terms of my own performances and where I felt, I felt no pressure. Someone said to me, you know, when you went, you was one of the biggest money signings at the time. Was you under pressure? I said, no, not at all. I always felt I could go there and score goals.
Yeah, I spoke to Warren Barton last week, sort of just about that season. I said to him, and I do mean it, is that team of yours and Kevin's, it ruined football for me as a Newcastle fan because like that's my touchstone, and so I've seen Newcastle play like that,
And therefore, I think Newcastle should always play like that, or should be able to play like that. And it's a silly thing to say, but it's true. It's like, it was so good that everything else has felt like a... I mean, it wasn't a disappointment to see them win a trophy, but like, so much else feels like a disappointment in life. But anyway. Yeah.
And you know what? And I liken that to always say to people, when supporters complain, the reason why they complain is because they've seen the standard at their football club. And that's whether it be the team, whether it be individuals, they've seen individuals rise to a level. And if they drop below those standards, they'll let you drop a little bit. But if you fall too high below the standards that you've set, then people are going to complain. And as you said, for a few years at St James's Park at Newcastle, you saw a brand of football that was second to none.
Yeah.
And so that's the benchmark for you.
So a lesson that 95-96 team set a remarkable benchmark for how we watch Newcastle United, George, didn't he? Maybe that even plays into the current team's travails a little bit as well.
It does. I mean, because he talks about there himself. I mean, he knows this, having been an executive, of course, at QPR for a long time. It's like when you've seen your team be good, it's very difficult to then see them be less good, even if it's slightly less good. As it sometimes can be. And, you know, Newcastle had this back in 95, 96, and in the years afterwards, it always felt like they were kind of chasing what they nearly had and never kind of quite got there. And, you know, for people of my generation or not far off it, one of the reasons why the Ashley era was so difficult to stomach was because we had this feeling of a club not straining for anything anymore. Yeah. After all those years of straining for something, you know, wanting to win something, wanting to be the team that kind of broke that hoodoo or whatever. And then the fact that they gave up, or that's how it felt, was like so incredibly damaging. And we are like going through this now. We've seen Newcastle win a trophy last season. We've seen them qualify for the Champions League. So although most people understand the context for this season and the difficulties because of the summer and, you know, et cetera, it's still very difficult to take. Speaking personally, I go to St James's Park. I mean, maybe less now, but you are going to Newcastle games thinking that Newcastle should win. And that's a very different sensation to going to Newcastle and hoping they'll win and feeling really excited and happy when they do. So, yeah, I mean, but that team, as I keep saying, that team spoiled football for me because they were just so good, so good.
It's sad to hear that he'll have mixed feelings about the flag display, but entirely understandable as well. We've been watching highlights of 95-96 for research, haven't we? And if a reminder was needed of what a remarkable footballer he was, we absolutely got it. And he should have a banner for that alone. Really, George?
Yeah, so I think what's important to say here is that this campaign isn't necessarily about celebrating the achievements of these players on the pitch. It's marking the fact that they were the first 11 to play for Newcastle. Now, when I go through this list, it's Howard Gayle. He signed on loan at Newcastle, but also played for Sunderland. Tony Cunningham, who was the first permanently signed black player. Then we're coming into players who I remember watching vividly. I mean, it's crazy to think about this. Merendinha, Franz Kard, Justin Fashanu, who I'd forgotten had briefly played for Newcastle. Andrew Cole, Rule Fox, Les Ferdinand, Shaka Hislop, Tino Asprilla, and John Barnes. And so not all of those players had a glorious time or even a positive time at Newcastle. But it's about sort of talking about the history of Newcastle and black players. And by the way, there is going to be an exhibition in the Millburn Stand on the day of the Bournemouth game. So I would urge people to kind of get there early. Look in the Millburn Stand entrance. Andrew Cole is coming to the game. That's great. That's really interesting. But this is a campaign that was set up by Jed Grebby, by Shaka Hislop, who was started with a 50 quid donation from Shaka 30 years ago. So it has its roots in Tyneside. Really, really important. And I do want to give a shout out to Lisa Mole at the Newcastle United Supporters Trust, who's been really instrumental in moving this project forward and also the Football Supporters Association. And I remember back in the 80s, back in the 90s, I mean, when this campaign was set up, it was often fans who were setting up these campaigns, setting up anti-racist campaigns outside St. James's Park. I vividly remember the National Front distributing leaflets outside St. James's, and people did do counter demonstrations. It really has been a fan-led campaign, this. And yeah, absolutely fair play and well done. Those people are, by the way, 100% worth celebrating. They should be.
And you talked to Les about how this problem's moved online, and that's certainly true, but there was the reported abuse of Le Charles Gietruda at the Derby. The police have subsequently made an arrest linked to that incident at St. James's, and now Brian Brobbey has suffered online abuse from Tottenham fans this weekend as well. These are alarming reminders of a problem that definitely hasn't gone away.
It's just so distressing. I mean, I think my... You know, I thought some of Les's answers were interesting because he sounded so tired, I thought, in some of his answers. And when this alleged incident happened against Sunderland, I had that feeling of absolute revulsion, but it also felt shock. Now, I suppose my shock is, if I compare it again to watching football in the late 1980s, there were monkey chants, you know, bananas were thrown onto the pitch. This was a common occurrence. You know, he talked about the collective having changed. I just got such a visceral reaction to it. And he sort of took that conversation on and talking about the online abuse, sort of that feeling of dreading seeing a black player take a penalty because he knows if the penalty is saved or if the penalty is missed, he knows what kind of comes afterwards. And so there is a sort of, I don't know if irony is the right word, we look at our Newcastle team and teams in the Premier League, incredibly diverse, multicultural, representing places all over the world. You know, I'm incredibly proud of that. Football stadiums themselves have become events that people can go to with families, multicultural, very diverse, and most of the time people don't suffer the kind of problems that used to exist there. But it's not that problem has gone away. I think people are very conscious that if they step out of line inside the arena of a football stadium, they'll be found and either prosecuted or punished in some way, and it's just pushed it elsewhere. That's why these campaigns are still absolutely vital. So it's very timely that this is happening, I think, at this weekend. We should pay tribute to the work of Show Racism, the Red Card, and the vast, vast, vast majority of Newcastle fans and football fans, but it's still a live issue. It hasn't gone away.
I mean, what allegedly happened against Sunderland, yeah, I was shocked as well. And I think in a slightly different way. I find it absolutely shocking in a way when you talk about how football grounds were in the 80s, because I didn't experience any of that. So to even hear that, and for me, and because I was born in the early 90s, and then my first experience of football matches were sort of early 2000s onwards, I didn't see any of that. And so to me, that is so alien to anything that I've witnessed, that any sort of incident of racist abuse, because every football match I've basically been to throughout my entire life, the teams have been multicultural. There've been a variety of ethnicities within the side. Is that having black players is not unusual for basically the entirety of my football supporting life. Whereas when you talk about it, it does surprise me that Les Ferdinand would be in that team of the first 11 black players for Newcastle. But that's because in my lifetime it is. Every team has black players, or just about every team. Some teams are majority black players, and that's great, and that's the way things have changed. So yes, I did find it deeply shocking what happened allegedly against Sunderland, and then the general abuse. And when you just see it, it's like when you see like the abuse that Joe Willock's had, other players, as you mentioned on social media, it's just like that your thoughts would be to go that way immediately. It's just it does show how important this campaign remains. And I remember one of the first events I did as a reporter was as Race and Red Card event at St. James's Park 10-11 years ago, I think it was, and to hear the work that they did then, and the 10 years on, it's just as important as ever, and that was shown with that Sunday match, without doubt.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
So we are trying to salvage crumbs from the hollow crust of a broken season, aren't we, chaps? If European football is to play a part in the renewed energy of next season, we're going to have to manufacture at least 3 wins, maybe even 4 or 5 from our remaining 6 games. An absurd project, really, given what we've seen recently. But let's have a look at the fixtures. Newcastle are yet to play Bournemouth, Arsenal away, Brighton at home, Nottingham Forest away, West Ham at home, and Fulham away. George Culkin, can you find 3 wins in there? That's the same noise I made when I tried to answer that question.
Well, I mean, I can, of course, because in my role as the podcast perpetual optimist, I look at that list, and it's not too long ago we were talking about Newcastle approaching every fixture with the attitude of winning or trying to win. And so I know that's in there somewhere. I think I will believe because I want to believe, but that's not based on evidence. So I'm giving you a feeling of optimism that's not based on evidence. I want it to succeed. I want the season to end strongly, and you know I want there to be a there will be a reset. I want there to be a big reset, but I mean I'm struggling. I can't give you any evidence to say they should beat this team because. I mean, we can go through all the fixtures individually and say, I mean, it would just be hilarious if Newcastle go to Arsenal and win again in the circumstances. But at the moment, that's where I'm getting my footballing pleasure, is looking at other teams and sort of smiling at clubs failing, even though I'm perfectly
just,
aware
but that just Newcastle putting your hands over your eyes when it comes to your own club. Just laughing at others. Yeah.
Strangely, of all those fixtures, the one that I'd say that I wouldn't have the most confidence in, but I'd look at it and say it's actually Fulham away on the final game of the season, because that's where Newcastle tend to go and they tend to do well at Craven Cottage. So in a strange sort of way, that would be the one that I'd look at and say they've probably got the best chance in. But if they haven't won any of the 5 preceding games leading up to that, then this would be a very different conversation.
Yeah, if they can't get 3 wins in there, what do we think, Chris, is the minimum requirement between now and the end of the season?
Well, I think the minimum requirement in general is that to see some sort of positive progress, to see that the time on the training pitch is working, to have a discernible plan of attack. That was what I found so dispiriting, I think, on Sundays. It's not even just that it didn't, that obviously the way the game ended, but even before that, I thought Newcastle were all right in terms of controlling game in a way of that Palace weren't that bothered and Newcastle were passing it around much, but I couldn't necessarily work out what the game plan was. And I think there's been too often maybe as to it's unclear exactly where Newcastle are, or they're caught between a few different stools. So I think we have to see that, and we used the word earlier on in the show, there needs to be some sort of positive momentum, and at the minute they have none. So if that can't come in the form of victories, which I think it partly needs to, but if it can't come in that form, then it needs to be in the style of play and the way Newcastle are playing and the game plan moving forward, then there needs to just be far more about them than there has been in recent games.
Newcastle are closer to 18th in terms of points than they are to 4th.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that can't be the case by the end of the season. I mean, it's like, you know, it's very difficult to put a tangible figure on it, or tangible, you know, success rate, top 10, you know, whatever. But like, they look like a team. They're playing like a team which is closer to 18th than is to 4th. Yeah, and I just don't think that's sustainable.
Of course, Bournemouth have their own things to think about now as well, don't they, with manager Andoni Iraola. He's now a bit of a lame duck after he and the Cherries failed to reach an agreement to renew his contract. It adds a little bit of spice to the weekend, doesn't it, George?
Lame duck. They've just beaten Arsenal. I mean, I know... And they played very, very well in that match.
They did, yeah. With tongue planted firmly in cheek, George, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's done very well. I mean, a sort of interesting thing is that there's a kind of similar profile to kind of what Eddie Howe has done, you know, aggressive, forward, front-footed team. I suppose I should point out that before that win against Arsenal, they'd drawn five matches, so it's not all sweetness and light there. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the response from their players and their fans are, whether it's kind of supportive, whether it's hesitant. Newcastle can't focus on that. They've just got to look after themselves, haven't they?
And of course, Chris, they thrashed us at St James's Park last season, didn't they?
I did 4-1. That was the end of Newcastle's 9-game winning run up to that stage, and it ended in a very abrupt fashion. They were very, very good that day. Bournemouth brilliant early on, smothered Newcastle. Newcastle couldn't respond. Howe's winless in 7 home and away Premier League games against Bournemouth since joining Newcastle. I think it's 5 draws and 2 defeats. He has beaten them in the League Cup at St James's. That was in the 2022-23 when Newcastle reached the final. And they also obviously they won after the penalty shootout in the FA Cup in January at home as well. So he has overcome them in cup competitions. But yes, that will be a new hurdle for him if he can finally beat them in the Premier League.
What do we think about these people saying that it's a bit of an audition for Iraola for the Newcastle job? What do we think of that?
Well, it's premature. I think we would have to say that. There have been links linking him with Newcastle in the event of Eddie Howe going.
Let's be honest, George, he's not going to be short of suitors, is he, for a new job?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, there's been a lot of reports linking him back to Bilbao, and I'm sure clubs in the Premier League would be looking at him. We know other clubs who are losing managers this summer already, like Crystal Palace, for example. But if you're looking at perceptions, what Newcastle will be very eager to avoid is that in one dugout, there's a established manager whose team are looking tired, whose team are looking disinterested, whose team are not looking hungry, versus a younger manager whose team are aggressive and front-footed and playing for him. That is something that will go down like a shit sandwich this weekend. So, Newcastle have to do everything they can to avoid that.
To avoid a shit sandwich, yeah, it's a good idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right then, let's move on, chaps, and finish things off. So get yourself over to podonthetine.supportandcast.fm. That's the place to go if you want to subscribe to Extra Time and have a listen to all of our additional content. Chris will fill us in on loans and youth development this week. And when you do sign up, you also get access to our back catalogue of previous Extra Time shows, including 4th anniversary documentaries we've made on Eddie Howe and the Take over, plus a visit to the Alan Shearer Centre, which went out last week. And I must say, it was a lovely and emotional listen as well, George. A fantastic piece of audio, that.
Thank you. We wanted, as a podcast, to highlight the incredible work of Alan's foundation, and the Alan Shearer Centre does brilliant work in the city. It's something I've written about before. I just thought it lent itself very nicely to a podcast, and also to use that as a vehicle to try and get beneath Alan's skin a little bit. He is a tough, he was a brilliant footballer, tough fella, but also has absolutely dedicated himself to this brilliant charity. And it's a big year for Alan and the foundation. They've just launched this campaign to raise £1 million. They want to improve their hydrotherapy offering, so it's a big deal, and it's something that Alan promoted on BBC Breakfast. But yeah, would love people to have a listen to that.
Right then, that's it, chaps. Thanks very much for your time. Please get in touch with us. The email is podonthetine@gmail.com. Give us a follow on Twitter X and Blue Sky @podonthetine. That's it for today. Chris Wharf, thank you very much for your time. Has the bin man just pulled up outside your house, Chris?
He has, yeah, he has. So apologies, everyone. That's what you can hear.
Wonderful.
But thank you, thank you for everyone for your time, and hopefully next week's show can be a little bit more uplifting in terms of a football point of view, but I'm not holding my breath necessarily on that yet.
No, definitely not. And thank you as well to yourself, George.
Well, Clinton. If and when the bin man comes around to my house, I'm tempted just to throw myself into the back of it.
Just get straight in there, yeah.
Straight to the scrap heap for me. Yeah. If I do make it through to next week, I'll look forward to chatting to you then.
Lovely stuff. We'll speak to you then, George. Thanks very much to all of you for listening, and from everybody at Pod on the Time, take care. Goodbye.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.